Now, more compelling talk radio, 1320 WILS, is live and Lansing with Michael Cohen and the Capital City Recap.
Good evening. It is Thursday. I'm Michael Cohen, producer Solomon Martin. Great to have you here on WILS. Still very nice, 82 at the moment. Tonight, we'll talk about what happened 90 years ago right here in the Lansing area in Bath Township, the nation's deadliest school massacre. The details are just as shocking today as they were back in 1927. You'll hear all about it here on WILS. Also, today, an event in Lansing looking at autonomous vehicles. What is it going to take for Michigan to actually lead in the transformation revolution? We'll find out. Let's begin, though, with what happened this week at the here in Lansing, the State Senate Judiciary Committee hearing testimony on a bill that would punish students that infringe on free speech rights of others. Stanley Kurtz was brought in to testify on the issue. He's a senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center and a contributing editor at the National Review. Stanley, great to have you on WILS.
Mike, thanks so much for having me.
And you've studied this for a long time. In fact, you say this issue of free speech on campus and basically shutting it down has been going on since the 60s. Is that right?
That's right, Mike. It really goes back, at least in the current pattern that we're seeing, to the early 60s. There was a very famous report that Yale University put out in 1974. It was called the Woodward Report, and it really is considered the classic statement on campus free speech and recommended many steps to take to protect campus free speech. And it came about because for about 10 years before that, there had been, of course, intense demonstrations and a lot of shout-downs and disinvitations, just the sort of thing we've been seeing a lot of lately, right through the height of the 60s and early 70s. And so this is a problem that is not new, but it does definitely seem to be increasing in the last several years in very disturbing ways.
You said over the decades it came in waves. What is the latest wave of anti-free speech on campus?
Well, the latest wave is to take this pattern of shout-downs and not only intensify it, but to add these very novel devices that we're hearing about in the last few years, like trigger warnings, microaggressions, safe spaces. There's never been anything quite like that. Even at the height of the 60s, when we saw a lot of student shout-downs of speakers that they didn't like, there was still a sense that we're tough. You know, we demonstrators are tough. We're not cowering here in little safe spaces needing protection. So there seems to be a different theme. And some people argue that this has to do with the way the millennial generation was raised, that perhaps they were overprotected. And there may be some truth to that, but I think another element of it is that the K through 12 curriculum that we've had for now about 20 years emphasizes all of the problems in America and tends to pit groups against each other. And I think this has created a lot of the attitudes that are behind the speaker shoutdowns that we're seeing.
So if you're talking about concerns about microaggression and triggers, what kinds of speeches is really allowed on campus nowadays?
Well, nowadays, the truth is, of course, that most of the campus orthodoxy comes from the political left. And if you're a libertarian or a conservative, it's going to be hard for you on a typical college campus. That may not be universally true, but that's certainly the overwhelming tendency.
Why do you think conservative speech is viewed as aggressive speech?
Well, that's a great question. I think that there has been a tendency in liberalism to move away from its classic liberal roots, and instead of emphasizing fair debate and meeting someone's perspective on the grounds of rational argument, there's been an attempt to say, no, you're not worth debating with. There's something wrong with your attitude. We don't like your attitude. You must be a bigot. You must be prejudiced. This is really a tremendously powerful and successful non-debate technique. It's a successful political technique, but I think it's hurting the country because it tends to polarize groups and pit them against one another.
And so right now on campuses, even here in Michigan, MSU or University of Michigan, what kind of voice do conservatives have at the moment, would you say?
Well, I think they're feeling put upon, under siege, intimidated. I can give you an example, Mike, of something that applies even really more broadly than conservatives, a terrible event that I don't know whether your listeners have heard about that occurred in September of 2016 on the University of Michigan Ann Arbor campus, the flagship campus of the University of Michigan system. There's a very well-respected organization on the Ann Arbor campus called the Michigan Political Union, and they put on a debate in September of 2016 on whether the Black Lives Matter movement was productive or counterproductive for race relations. And about 10 minutes into that debate, a couple of hundred protesters barged into the room, maybe 100 of them actually fit into the room, which was already at capacity, and started screaming insults and obscenities at the debaters and basically shut down the debate.
Now, the legislation is meant to punish, that's being considered here in Lansing for Michigan, is going to punish students. What kind of punishment do you think is appropriate?
Well, it all depends on the particular instance, but I'll tell you what I think is a too mild punishment. We saw these protesters against Charles Murray, who was a conservative scholar who tried to speak at Middlebury College, and the students shouted him down. He was unable to speak. They had to bundle him off to give a lecture on private video, and the students who shouted down his lecture, they announced the punishment for them. A letter of reprimand was put into their records, and if the students are good for a semester, even the letter of reprimand will be removed from the record. And I would say that that is far too mild a punishment for a shout down. The Woodward Report, which I mentioned earlier, said that if people are really egregiously participating in a shout down, then they ought to be susceptible to suspension or even expulsion.
Right, and that's part of the legislation that's considered now for these incidents here in Michigan to suspend or expel these students from campus. What's the general reaction from the universities to these incidents, especially when there's a shout down happening?
Well, it's very interesting because the University of Michigan already has a policy that says if you interfere with the free speech rights of a speaker and of the listeners who want to hear that speaker, the police may eject you from the event. And this warning was actually read at the debate that I just mentioned that was shut down.
Okay.
And amazingly, there were administrators and police present in the room, and even though the warning had been read, nobody said anything to the protesters.
Yeah, now, but if you've got a couple hundred students, you know, marching on police, they're not, what do you expect
exactly.
them to really do?
That's right? What I was about to say. But if it were me, I would then, after the fact, since this is all on video, I would have taken at least the leaders of the protest and subjected them to some kind of suspension, and maybe put a letter of reprimand that would be in the record that would not be removed from the record, you know, after a semester like the Middlebury thing for the other protesters. But the truth is, I would rather not have to do any of that, because I believe that this legislation that we're talking about will help to deter these events from ever happening. This legislation has a provision that says in freshman orientation, the students should be familiarized with the policy that mandates penalties by state law for repeat offenders. And the students, I believe that if the students are properly warned of the policy, and if, let's say, in one or two incidents, the policy is enforced, I believe it will have a deterrent effect. That's what happens.
So how should students protest, then, if they really disagree with the speaker even being on campus? What should they be able to do?
Well, they could be at the talk and hold signs. They could turn their back on the speaker. They could protest very loudly outside of the actual venue, scream and yell to their heart's content, chant slogans. As long as they're not making it impossible for the speaker to be heard by the people who want to hear the speaker.
Have these kinds of laws really changed the behavior in other states?
Well, these kind of laws haven't existed in the past because, as the Woodward Report shows, in the more distant past, universities enforce these policies themselves. I mentioned that the University of Michigan has a policy, and they read it out loud. Now, they don't seem to be enforcing that policy anymore. And if the universities had been doing this themselves, then we wouldn't need legislation. The problem is the university administrators, and this is national, not just at Michigan, university administrators seem to have become totally reluctant to protect free speech on their campuses.
Now, what's really holding them back from doing that?
I think there are a variety of reasons, but one of them is that there is a kind of consumerist mentality in universities. They don't want to discourage or anger the customer, so to speak. They don't want to anger the students. They don't want to anger the parents of the students. If they were to discipline students, the students might then protest further, and then it would be on the front pages. Then people would be talking about it in the news, and the administrators really just want the publicity to go away.
We never see these protests, though, against liberal speakers on campus. Why do you think that is?
I would like to believe that conservative students tend to respect individual rights. They tend to respect the idea of political debate. They still understand the idea that even though I disagree with you, I defend your right to speak. And traditionally, liberals believed exactly this, and many liberals still do believe this, but on campus, there is a kind of leftism that is much more extreme. It's really a kind of neo-Marxist approach that goes back to the infamous work of Herbert Marcuse in the 1960s, a neo-Marxist thinker who said that you really shouldn't tolerate speech that advocates oppressive social views. And
so, you're saying, Stanley, you believe students come into the university system already with these philosophies and ideas in their head already?
I think that K-12 is already beginning to teach this to too many students, and then I think it's reinforced when they study with many of the professors at universities who no longer believe in the classic liberal traditions of free speech. When I went to school, I had maybe 3, 4, maybe even as many as 5 courses where we were asked to read John Stuart Mill's great work on liberty, which was the classic defense of free speech. And this was not uncommon in those days. John Stuart Mill was widely taught. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, the radical postmodernist neo-Marxist theorists that dominate throughout the academy really go against the basic assumptions of classic liberal tolerance.
One last thing, Stanley. You said this has been ongoing since the 60s. Do you really think a law like this really changes a dynamic that's been happening for decades now?
Well, I think it could, because we haven't tried to work this through legislation, and there's some oversight mechanisms here that draw in the Board of Governors that try to involve regents and the boards that run universities that really have laid back and not gotten involved in these controversies, but technically have the authority to do so. Okay. And I think if we can activate them, I think the administrators might have second thoughts about rolling over to these demonstrators.
Yeah. Do they fundamentally agree with them, too, the administrators?
Oftentimes the people on the governing boards of the institutions do agree with the administrators, but sometimes they don't. And so there, I think we have at least a chance. Also, the annual report that would be given by the governing boards would be submitted to the legislature. And if the report said that the administrators had not done the right thing on free speech, the legislature could use that as a viewpoint-neutral reason to cut the funds of the university.
Yeah, that'll certainly draw a reaction. Stanley Kurtz, senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, contributing editor for the National Review. Stanley Kurtz right here on WILS. Stanley, great to have you here on WILS.
Mike, thanks so much for having me.
Stanley was here in Lansing this week, testifying in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee.